Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Poet Ana Maria Flores Tamayo came to the U.S. as a Cuban refugee child with her family. Her experience working with immigrant students as an educator inspired her to become an immigration advocate. Flores Tamayo is currently the executive director of the Refugee Support Network, where she leads pro se asylum clinics. Flores Tamayo's latest poetry collection is called Peregrina, Pilgrim, a bilingual collection of poems and photos that breathe with the immigrant experience. She tells us more about her journey as a refugee child to writer and poet.
I am a refugee child. My father was a Cuban refugee. He was a political refugee, and I came here to the United States when I was very, very little. And first we settled in Florida, in Miami, and we were there for about 2 years when he got into a program that helped Cuban refugees get their revalidation for their degrees. And we went from Florida to Montana, where he got his revalidation for his law degree.
That's a big switch.
Yes, it really was. I loved it because I was a little girl. But my mother suffered. She had all these kids and didn't know the language.
And
the
cold.
Weather was very different. So she really suffered. But anyway, at least in Montana, it was with a group of Cuban refugees. So she was still with other people who spoke Spanish and everything else. But once my father finished, when he got his revalidation, he went on to get his first job teaching Spanish language in Minnesota, North Branch, Minnesota. You know, I learned English really well and everything else, but I was still very much in a cocoon because there were other refugee children and stuff. So I was still in that little bit of this very isolated place. But when we moved to Minnesota, we lived in a farm 8 miles from the nearest town of 1,000 people. And now that I'm moving back to Minnesota, I'm in touch with the people that I was friends with when I was 10 years old. But I loved being there. I felt like I had come home. I felt like it was my place. At the same time, I always remembered being this child in Florida where everyone kind of rejected me because I was this outsider. And then when I see people now coming in, I feel like I have to help them. And so finally we left Minnesota because my mom was very tired of the cold. She said, I can't handle it anymore. So we moved to New Jersey, and then I went to school there and I met my husband and everything else. But anyway, when I was, I guess about 2010, 2012, I started teaching. I went on and got my PhD. I didn't finish my PhD, though. I'm ABD, all but the dissertation.
Oh.
So,
what were you studying?
Comparative literature. That's another story. But anyway, I was teaching at a college, and I was working a lot with students that were DACA. They were childhood arrivals. And so I started listening to them and talking with them. And then I realized that their parents, they at least had DACA. Their parents had nothing. And so from helping the kids with DACA, I started getting involved in helping the parents, getting their documents and stuff. So in 2012, we began forming this asylum clinic. And we did this with a good friend of mine now. We went to the border, and this was just because we went to a protest in Austin. And we were there at the protest, and then somebody was telling me they were going to take some clothing over to the border. And so we packed our huge car, which is this expedition. We packed it with clothing, and we went to McAllen, and then we stayed for the weekend helping. And that weekend was just, that was it. That was what started me doing this asylum clinic and doing all that. So when we were coming back, we brought one of the asylum seekers who was coming to be with family in Dallas. So we took her and her daughter back up to Dallas. We dropped her off and we said, we'll help you find lawyers or something. So we went to Human Rights Initiative, which was an organization that helped refugees. At the end, she was so terrified, she ended up not going, but we went as interpreters. And that's where we met Paul Soltan, who was the founder of this clinic that I am now the director of, Refugee Support Network. It's completely volunteer run, all pro bono work. We do everything through students who are interested in law or, you know, anything like that, because we work very closely with UNT and the professors there, and I overlook everything. And so we were doing this at first through Catholic Charities, and then after a couple of years, we went and started doing it through Raices. And then COVID hit. And so when COVID hit, everything kind of closed down and I kept the bare minimum, but I did that by myself. And then one of the lawyers would, after I had done everything, she would sign it because I still couldn't sign anything. And then they would take it to the court so that they would at least have their asylum application in. So in 150 days, they could apply for their work authorization. After that, they could get their work and they could get their social security number. They could get driver's license. So at least it gave them a little bit more of a chance of becoming part of society, becoming part of the culture around them. And that was really good because asylum takes a really, really long time and it's really hard to get. And so I've had a few asylum cases that I did that did win. They did get asylum and I'm very happy about that. So anyway, I've been doing all this to help, you know, asylum seekers pro bono. In the meantime, I got my accreditation so I can help them in court. But through all this, I had to do something to get all my energy out, to get all that angst out. Because it's very, very difficult work. Listening to these stories, these narratives that these women tell you, and I worked mostly with women and children. They are the ones who give me all the details. They tell me what they've been through. And so I have so much respect and love for them. And all the work I do and the poetry I write is for them. So anyway, I started writing because I needed to be strong to do all this work. And I couldn't let all this sorrow and all this angst come out. And so I took it and I wrote it out. And so I started writing poetry, even though I had always been writing. And so this is when I started writing poetry and trying to publish it at the same time, just to have an outlet. And then when I had that outlet, I would go back and I would keep on working and be strong and be happy for them and stuff. And they really kept giving me so much joy, because even though they'd been traveling thousands of miles and they had been through hell, literally, they would come in and they would have so much joy and they would look at the things that they had, you know, and that gave me so much hope.
Poet Ana Maria Flores Tamayo is the author of the new collection Peregrina, Pilgrim, published by Conocimientos Press. When we come back, like many former child refugees, Flores Tamayo grew up in the U.S. with English as her dominant language, but she still clings to the language that ties her to home.
And I have one of my poems, Conflict, Conflicto, and it's that whole idea of being caught between languages and you don't know what's what.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
A contribution to Texas Public Radio through a charitable IRA rollover brings great benefits to us and you, the donor. For more information about this tax-advantaged type of gift, please contact your financial advisor or visit us at tpr.org/distribution.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Poet Ana Maria Flores Tamayo has dedicated her non-writing career to helping asylum seekers, and that work seeps into the words she puts on the page. Her latest collection, Peregrina, Pilgrim, pulls the reader into the desert, into the detention center, into a range of emotions from agony to joy. Flores Tamayo explains how the often harrowing stories she hears from asylum seekers are transferred through her into her poems.
It's not one person. It's not one feeling. Yes, I take stories from here and there, but I don't pinpoint one story. It's universal. It's every woman, every child, every man. It speaks to everyone, every migrant who comes, and every migrant and how they feel as they're coming here. And one of the first poems I wrote, which is how I started the book, was Refugee. And that's a very long poem, but it talks about the process of her going through what happened in her home country all the way through to being detained and fighting for her life and fighting for her freedom. And that whole process is, yes, one person, many persons, but it's also me. Everyone can read it and can get something out of it. And even as Americans or as people from here, they can also get something. Because I basically grew up here. I'm basically American. And so I, too, am part of this potluck of immigrants, because we are all immigrant. And so this has started back from hundreds of years ago, and it's going on today.
And, you know, it's funny, I'm reading some works by Reina Grande, a Mexican writer, and she writes about coming to the U.S. as a child illegally with her parents, and about her being forced to sort of lose her language. So her language was kind of frozen at the third grade level when she left Mexico because she was forced to speak English. You were, I think, fortunate enough to have that isolated community you were telling us about. So you were able to keep that grasp of Spanish.
My father had a lot to do with it. My father was very much of a stickler to have us speak the language. However, when you're little, you want, especially when you grow up in a family of nine, you want to fit in. When you're with your schoolmates, everyone speaks English, and you want to speak English. And so when you're home and you're speaking with your siblings, you're also speaking English. But when we sat down at that dinner table, my father would say, "No, you have to speak Spanish." And we'd be like, And so everyone was very quiet during dinner. But then afterward, you know, I spoke Spanish, but I spoke Spanish with an accent. It was very much of a gringo speaking Spanish. But then I was in college and I had to take a required course and I didn't know which one to take. And I said, "Oh, Spanish literature. Let me take this." It was on Latin American literature. And oh my God, I fell in love. It was just wonderful. All the novels about the boom of Latin American literature and everything else. And I was just floored. I was like, wow, this is gorgeous. I've never read anything. And I just kept reading and reading. And I didn't know how to read and write in Spanish very well. So I basically taught myself. When I met my husband, he thought I was American who spoke very good Spanish, but I spoke like an academic Spanish. When he found out I was Cuban, he was horrified. He said, but you have such a gringo accent. You know, but anyway, it's gotten a lot better and my Spanish has definitely improved. When I do have to write a business letter, I always have him proofread it because, you know, some of my business acumen is not quite up to par, but as far as everything else is pretty good. As far as reading and writing, English is my first language. I feel more comfortable in it. And I have one of my poems, Conflict, Conflicto, and it's that whole idea of being caught between languages and you don't know what's what. And in the end, my language is Spanish. That's where I was born and that's my language. But for so long, I thought it was English. And yes, I have both languages. I can go back and forth between them very easily. But Spanish is the language.
And you write in both English, yes, and Spanish, as you were saying. Do you do like direct translations of one or the other? Or are there poems that work best in English and others that work best in Spanish?
This book I wrote bilingually. I wrote in both languages. I don't talk about translation. I talk about interpretation. I feel very strongly about this. Translation is just word for word. Whereas if you're writing a poem, you cannot translate a poem. You have to interpret it because it can't be word for word, because then it wouldn't be a poem in that other language. And if you want it to be a poem in that other language, it has to be an interpretation. And so I'm very, very committed into saying this is not a translation, it's an interpretation. And I do try to get the meaning of everything, but certain things cannot translate. And so I get the meaning of it, but not the exact translation.
So when you were getting poems together, do you already have them sort of planned on how you would like them ordered and printed in a book? Or is that something an editor does? I mean, how was the thought process that went into this collection?
Well, I pretty much had it as it is. And I started off with Refugee because this is a woman who is going from her home country to the north. I mix a lot of personal narratives within the different poems, but then I end with a very hopeful poem of a girl who has arrived and who realizes that she is an immigrant, but she's going to go on ahead and she's going to be successful in the end. And so it starts out as a refugee, but at the end, she is in hold of herself. She is complete. Even though she's a young girl, she knows what she wants and she's going to get it. And this is what I wanted to have come through. And this is how I tried to have the poetry come through, that from the beginning to the end, this thread goes that immigrant comes through and goes all the way through and they will succeed.
Well, can you read an excerpt for us from Peregrina, yeah, English or Spanish, your choice?
Okay. I'll read you the first part of Refugee. Refugee is divided into five parts, so I will read you the first section. My soul into pieces, I see the barbed wire ripping metal against skin. Crying tears of blood, I hear gunshots and the vacuumed silence of the gang's Salva Maratrucha. I push him under the fence, but my son cries. No matter, I do it because I love him. We walk, 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 hours and hours on the rotted roads of the coyotes, days, weeks, a month, hand in hand. We go sick, without eating, without drinking, without speaking. Or when we speak, we do so crying, because there is nothing left for more. Where did my little son's childhood go? When did he lose it? Is it when he saw his uncle fall by a bullet meant for his mother? The eternity of hell has bridged our path, and so we cross the border, reaching the river. We travel in rafts. I am the walking dead with my little son in my arms. We give up in that land of darkness as we throw ourselves at their feet. The faceless border patrol. No image, no semblance. And I say, whispering, I am afraid.
Anna, it's been such a pleasure talking to you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much, too. De todo corazón.
Gracias. Ana María Flores Tamayo is the author of the collection Peregrina, Pilgrim, published by Conocimientos Press. It's a bilingual collection of poems and photos by Flores Tamayo, inspired by her work with immigrants and asylum seekers. See video of Flores Tamayo reading Conflict, Conflicto from her collection at a recent book launch event in San Antonio. It's at tpr.org. Fronteras editors are Dan Katz and Yvette Benavides. The program is produced by Maria Navarro and Norma Martinez. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.